You are listening to Natural Born Alchemist.
You're listening to episode 351 of the Natural Born Alchemist podcast. I'm Alex and I'll be your host. And in this episode, I'm joined by Ricardo Calvario, an independent researcher at the Institute for Natural Philosophy. And we went into a lot of topics during our conversation, and everything from ancient library of Alexandria to contemporary issues such as the COVID vaccine or free speech. We also talk about the debut issue of Pharos magazine, which offers over 200 pages of thought-provoking content on natural philosophy and alternative history narratives. So I hope you enjoy it. Let's begin.
So thanks for being on the podcast again.
It's my pleasure and my privilege. I'm very grateful that you invite me once more. So just glad to be here and enjoy this conversation.
So can you tell the listeners, remind them who you are and what you do?
So my name is Ricardo Calvario. I live in Portugal. I'm 49 years old. I'm as makes no difference, 30 years researcher into the ancient past, into consciousness, metaphysics. I like to consider everything that the academics have done for the understanding of the world, and I like to put that in context with all the things that they don't. So like philosophy, mythology, religion, well, that kind of stuff. So lately I've been involved with the creation of the Institute for Natural Philosophy, and our latest high point was the release of the Pharos magazine that I hope people are enjoying, and those that aren't can go to the website and look at it. It's completely free.
So what's the name and what's it mean?
So the Pharos magazine, the name refers to the first lighthouse, or not the first, but the most famous lighthouse in the world. That is the lighthouse of Alexandria. That is the name is Pharos. And we are using the allegory that the light guided people to where we know there was a gigantic library, so a repository of knowledge. So the name of the magazine is exactly that, is a beacon where everyone has a free space to express themselves as long as they can back up their research with some facts, be them recognized by academic world or not.
So do you plan to release this for money, or will it always be free?
Well, the first one will be free, and probably all the special editions that we'll do every year in December will also be free digitally. The problem with keeping it free is that we do have to pay to all the people that were involved. So the graphic team alone, let me give you an example. We did Steve Wilbur, that is the very bright man that is doing the administration for the Institute, did a market study, and we reached to the point that launching a new magazine with the quality that we have launched in terms of graphic terms, so the content will be for everyone to judge, but in terms of graphic looks and the materials we want to use and so on, it would be something in the order of 100,000 euros just to calculate and start the procedures to produce such magazine. And we've done it all in 2 months with people working after hours, very talented people, including Jeffrey van der Loot, who is the master in terms of graphical design on the project. And well, we need to pay these people somehow. In fact, people invested their own money just to be able to subscribe to this or that website in order to obtain the right way to publish the magazine itself. And we had some snags because we were expecting to release the physical the magazine in physical form at the same time as the digital. And we were given a price of around 21, 22 euros just to print it. And when we finally uploaded the final product, the value that was given to us was 88 euros just to print it because of the quality settings that we chose and the paper and so on. So we are now trying to contact small businesses that have quality printers that are starting and are willing to do not only the printing of the magazine, but also the worldwide distribution. So we are working very hard on that. But a big round, a big circle, just to say that it's impossible for us to keep doing it for free, even the digital version, because we can't make money on the physical version because the price will always be high. So we can put an euro or so in each magazine, but the price will always be high. It will always around 20, 21, 22, 23 euros. But we're not know. We still don't know, but we hope to keep it that low, although it's high for a magazine. But on the digital, we intend to have, we are not sure yet, but around the 5 euros for each one. Considering it's a magazine with 90 to 110 pages, this special version has 212 with people that they won't see featured on any other magazine. And considering the quality is, if not the same, superior to a National Geographic, but the content in my opinion is much better. I'm sorry for the long answer, but it's complicated for me to have to ask money for this kind of things, but it's quite impossible to do it otherwise. If we had the means, we would do it, but we don't. We are all working after hours. We're all trying to, at least I am trying to leave my job back and dedicate myself to research at full time. But it's not easy. So we're hoping for the best and trying with all the means that we have.
Well, it looks professional, so I'm sure people are interested in the topic of alternative history and stuff like that, then it would be something they might be interested in.
Well, we sure hope so. The reception was very good.
But I suggest that you release parts of each issue digitally for free, like so people can like read like a certain percentage of it, but then to get it all they have to pay. That's always a good trick, you know, to get people to, because otherwise people might not want to buy it if they don't know what it is. But if you know, like there are like a paywall, like you can read to a certain point, but then the rest is locked unless you buy it.
Sure. There's various ways. For instance, George, that is Yorgos Designs, that is responsible for the merchandising design and sale for the Institute, and also a writer and philosopher. He's the writer of the Amateur Philosopher Chronicle in the magazine. He proposed exactly that, but we are not sure yet if, for instance, the articles that I will write and Guy will write and some people directly linked to the Institute will write, we probably will put them for free as a presentation for the magazine. And we might give some glimpse of the main names that would be writing for the magazine too. So thank you. It's a very good suggestion, yes.
Considering like it's not... To start a magazine and release it in physical form is these days very difficult. I mean, it's a dying business. So it has to be a very niche thing that people who are interested in that specific topic will pay for, because all the like the National Geographic and those kinds of magazines, they've all almost devolved into clickbait kind of articles. It's much worse now than 20 years ago. So to keep it like your magazine, where it's quality articles and not clickbait, might actually make it stick out.
Sure. And in that case, you have to be really good in selecting what you're going to sell. But yeah, I agree. When I presented this project, everyone sold me it would be impossible to do it. So it has been almost a year in the drawer, and I finally thought to myself, no, I have to try it even if it is alone. And so I start moving. I started inviting people. People agreed to participate and to write for the magazine without even knowing exactly what they're going into. And I'm very thankful for that. And I think the result is very good, because we have two academics, two certified academics that couldn't get published in their peers' realm, and they are published here in the magazine. We have people that have very good photographic skills, like Ian's, that made a glorious article about the area where he lives. I'm eager to see what he's going to do for the next issue. We have George, as I told you, myself. We had Brian Corey Dobbs, which I'm very grateful, because he's a very, very professional film director and producer. And he trusted on me, and I think he's pleased with the result. And in the initial thought is I missed the old National Geographic, where you go there to read and to learn. And as you say, now it's like every documentary in television that is about history or wildlife. It's all so, I'm sorry to say it, but Americanized. It's so based on almost hysterics that it's I don't know how to explain it this in the best way, but
it's either sharks or Hitler or the 10 most dangerous places to go in the winter.
Exactly, you know? Exactly. So it lost its charm. It lost its educational virtue. It's all about creating suspense and repetition and the use of intuition in the words that it's not for anyone to learn something, but just to keep them stuck to the screen. So we wanted to change that. We wanted to really bring people that are saying interesting things that are not necessarily in accord with what the academic dogmas are telling us, and give them a voice. And that was our purpose, and people have been very receptive to that. I hope we will increase the number of people interested in the magazine in the upcoming issues.
If you get try and get Hancock and Sheldrake and people like that who might understand how they could help.
Well, I will try to contact... Yeah, I will try to contact Rupert Sheldrake, because I did contact him by email, and he, contrary to Hancock, which I couldn't reach because his email seems always full, so either is rejected, and I couldn't find any other email that worked when I produced the frequencies of the Osiris Chef paper. And Rupert was surprisingly kind. He answered to the email, and he said that he couldn't help me that much because it was not his area, but he found it interesting and thanked me for sharing with him. So I will use that contact once more once I have the magazine settled. And try to actually see if he would write an article for us. That would be very interesting. As for Graham Hancock, I have my doubts, because it's very hard to contact him.
Yeah, I find it difficult when you are like me and you're probably interested in alternative history. It doesn't mean that all history to be good has to be alternative. I mean, like, some things in history, I probably go with the mainstream version. It all depends on what makes sense. But usually, when you really, whatever topic you pick, if you really start looking into it, you notice that it's never exactly the way you thought it was. It's always something, you know, like the Library of Alexandria, for example, everybody knows it burned down. But then when you look into it, it wasn't really one event. It was like many different events over a long period of time.
Yeah, and it was far from being the only repository of knowledge. You have another one in the Arab world. You had another one in India. So it is picked off as the only one, but it was far from it. It was not the only one. Although what people don't, a curious fact that most people don't know is, in those days, if you docked your boat in Alexandria, there were some officials that will go into the boat, search for any possible manuscript that you have. They took it, they confiscated it, and they care not if your supplies that you are carrying or delivering would go rotten, because they only let you go out and only give you the manuscripts back once they were copied in the library, and then they would be returned, and then the ship would be able to make its journey back.
I wonder if they did that even if the manuscript was not a good one, you know, like if it was some uninteresting manuscript, if they did it anyway.
I'm not sure, but the historical records only say that anything that was in written word, it was taken, confiscated, copied, and then returned. I'm not sure if there's just some doodling or the account of the ship does also counts for that, but I doubt it, of course.
I always find it weird that just because something is in print, it becomes fact somehow. And we all know today, you can read any news article about some current event, and then if you have any wider knowledge, you can see that this article is just a bunch of lies. But then that can't be a new thing. I'm sure that happened 2,000 years ago as well, like people writing just pure lies. So it's really hard to know. I mean, just because it's an old document doesn't mean what's in it is true.
Oh, sure. We found lots I hope I'm not saying some crazy stuff, but I do believe I read that in Pompeii, for instance, they find lots of satire. So that people would write just to mess up, like we do today. It's, the world isn't changed just because a few thousand years have passed. So we are just the same. We still like to fiction, and we still like reality. That there is that saying that he who wins writes the history, right? And this is not correctly the case, but history is no longer something that we can actually trust. And as Guy, my colleague in the Institute, that is Hayon Ksoma on X, wrote his article, we are in the age of information. So anyone who wants to be an expert in any kind of subject, as long as he has the time and dedication, he can do it. He doesn't need to take a university course to do it.
Yeah, no, I met, I think, I was at some sort of psychedelic conference, and Jeremy Narby was there, who wrote The Cosmic Serpent. And he's like, he has got a PhD in anthropology. And I told him that I'm also interested in indigenous cultures, and I would want to study it more and maybe get a PhD in anthropology. And he told me that, well, you don't have to have a PhD in anthropology to study indigenous culture. You can just study it, you know, like, I thought that was pretty cool, because it's very rare that somebody with a PhD like rejects the PhD, you know, because usually it's it kind of proves that he just drank his fair share of ayahuasca. He didn't really care that much about his PhD, you know.
Indeed. Look, it is a matter, and I'm not advising anyone not to take a PhD. I strongly encourage that they do. I only remark that they should not limit their knowledge to that PhD, but to research for themselves. Although perhaps it's better to do it after they graduate, because if they do it before, they will get negative results on their tests for saying something that is different to the curriculum. But if people are looking for the letters before the name, because this is a world that is full of people named Doctor, it's like the movie. What's the name of the movie? I can't remember it right now. But there's a character that is introduced to a group of astronomers, and so it is Doctor this, Doctor that, Doctor that, Doctor that, and it goes Doctor, 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 Doctor. Well, there's a lot of Doctors in this world, and because he is an alien, so it's out of context why everyone has the same name. And in fact, it's a reality. And the people that the most of the graduated people that I enjoy talking to or I met personally, they don't use the doctor of the or the PhD or whatever before the name because they feel it's ridiculous. But if you're doing it for a matter of ego and you want to follow the system, then the system is rigged exactly for that. If you want to go for knowledge, then perhaps you don't need the PhD. If you're not going to make a living out of it and invest in a career and be forced to repeat what you're told to say, well, then that's the path for you. It's a matter of choice and context.
It's rare that somebody with a title is open-minded, and usually they're very close-minded, and they kind of like, if you say some alternative fact, people don't take it as fact, even if it is fact, just because you don't have that title.
Yeah, and the problem is, and we all face this during our lives, when people look up to you or believe in what you say, they are not, their brains, although I don't think that thinking is in the brain, but just to simplify, their brains are not looking to see if what they're hearing is true or not. They just accept it as true. And I think that's the problem with the people that read all these PhDs and all these doctors that really are, I'm sorry, but they don't know what they're saying. So they're just following what was given to them, as any parrot would do. And school is exactly that. It's based on memory. It's not based on learning. It's based on memory. You just have to memorize, repeat what you memorize, and you pass. It's not about knowing. And that's what bothers me. In fact, that exactly what bothers me is that.
The only good thing about reading books that are written by somebody with a PhD is that they usually leave a good trail of sources. Sometimes when some people who are on the fringe, they don't have sources, so you can't really double check what they're saying. Of course, certain kinds of information, there can't be a source if it's philosophy or whatever. But if it's more of a historical thing, then they should. I like it when it's well documented in terms of footnotes.
Yeah, but look, a book to be good and to teach you doesn't have to exactly to get out of the narrow dogmatic views. The book that I first fascinated me in terms of learning was a book by Carl Sagan called Cosmos that I read about 7, 8 years old. And that book, although it was close-minded in many aspects, and for instance, I always thought that although I am not a believer in this astrology that we see on those magazines that are gossip magazine, I think that's how they're called. Horoscopes, okay, sorry. So yeah, that one, that part of astrology is to me complete bullshit. I'm sorry if I'm offending someone. But he has several pages just turning down why astrology is completely fake. The problem is, if you read the text and you follow the sources, you find out that there was some meaning to it, that these people were actually doing a job looking at actual mathematic figures to actual configuration, geometric patterns, alignments, and so on. And that reflects in all aspects of the ancient world, from construction to feng shui, to how do you put your furniture. So it is not, we shouldn't all take to the trash everything that is done dogmatically, because there is very good information, as you said. And if it had sources, even better, because one of the things that I used to say is we it's much easier to learn from someone we disagree with than from someone with that we agree with. So we should read everything, either we agree with a person or not, perhaps even more if we disagree, just to either strengthen our views or to see if there's some flaw in them.
Yes, that's why I think it's so funny that all these people who, and where I live, he's one of the most hated people in the world. I don't know why, but Elon Musk, but why they all close down their Twitter or X accounts because of reasons. And recently I was talking to somebody that I would call part of society, like a normal person, about what's going on in Israel. And I knew she agreed with me that it's horrible what's happening in Gaza. So I mentioned to her that, yeah, on Twitter every day I see reports and videos of what's actually happening on the ground. And she went, oh, I closed my Twitter down because it's right wing. And I was like, you're not, okay, even if it is right wing, you're limiting your view of the world, and in fact you agree with me that it's horrible what's happening in Gaza, so you would see evidence of that on this right-wing platform. Same thing with the Russian news network RT, where they blocked it, so you can't see what Russia is saying, which to me is also really strange. Like, why wouldn't, I mean, if Russia is a problem, then the first thing I want to do is I want to know what are they saying, you know? I mean, don't they know that you should know your enemy? You know?
Look, have you seen those posts that are now translating what Hitler was saying?
Yeah, yeah.
You've seen it, so. I've watched one or two because they never translate what the guy is saying, just the crazy gestures and rage and so on. But once you listen to what he's saying, it's obvious that he would make a massive follow-up, because what he's saying has some sense in it. He's not saying let's kill everyone, although that's what he did and that's wrong, but he had some sense in what he was saying. And that's probably why it was never translated. It was shown him as a madman gesticulating. So context is important. To actually see what people are saying, either we agree with them or not, is important. And please, now it's a question directly to you. Can you explain to me, because I never did understood it, can you explain me what is this thing about being right-wing or left-wing? Is people really referring to something real, or is just something that they listen and it's like a football club that they follow or something like that? Because I really can't understand, because they all have the same master. So what does it matter if some are called this or that when they follow all the same rules? They are all under the same system.
No, it's a membership of a cult, I think, because I always work from principle. So I have like certain principles. Like, for instance, one principle is I believe in free speech, especially in speech, the freedom of speech I disagree with. Because if I stop speech I disagree with, then I shoot myself in the foot, because eventually somebody will stop my speech. So I believe in absolute free speech. And I've always believed that as long as I can remember, I believed in free speech. And in the 90s, that was left wing, and today it's right wing. So the cult has changed. That goes for almost all the different topics you can think of. They change sides like that. Whereas, like for now, for instance, now the right are more anti-war, and before the left were more anti-war. And if that's because it's the people in charge who are left who are pro-war, so it's easier for the right to be against it. Whereas in the 90s, or like, not in the 90s, I mean, in the early 2000s, it was the right wing, George Bush and them, who had all these wars. So it's easier for the left wing to be against war because they're in a cult, you know, they have to be against the other side. Whereas I'm always against war. I don't care who, what side is in charge, you know, I'm just against war as principle. So it's for me, it's very simple. That's why it's always, always get in trouble. I always get called in the same day. I can be called left wing and right wing. So it's like pretty funny.
Well, it's, I think people lack objectivity and capability of analysis of their own, because it's much easier to just read on the newspaper or listening to the news in the television and just stick with it than actually go, this is fishy. This is strange. Let me look up and see what's really going on. So, for instance, in the time that you were speaking of, how many people were actually go and looked to see this story about weapons of mass destruction? Let's actually look at that country and see what they do have, or what is the real meaning behind this invasion? What's really going on? And we don't see people doing that. They just accept what is given, and that is, to me, is so strange. And then they even can categorize, as you said, as a politics movement of national interest. So I really don't get it, or I would completely fail at politics because I really don't understand it. I really don't.
I can't remember how old I was, but I was my early, late teens or early 20s on 9/11. And I remember when I was at a bar when it happened. So I saw it live on this, like, you know, like a sports bar, and where they show all the different sports games. So they all flipped over to 9/11 as it was happening. And my first reaction was, this looks like a scam. I don't even know what I just, like, gut feeling, like, I don't believe this. I mean, I believe what's happening, but I mean, I just, like, this looks fishy. You know, like, that was my first initial reaction. It just became fishier and fishier the more we found out.
Look, I during that time, I did many hours of research to actually see the veracity of the event, including going to the extreme of having 9 hours of continuous speech from the fire department, from the guys that go in, enter to the basement, to the guys that were inside the building, the guys that were outside the building, all the communications. I saw how the building was constructed. I looked into airplanes and crashes. I looked to previous planes crashing into buildings, and there was not one bit of it that could be corroborated. Not one. And yet people kept believing all the stories that were being told. And this is not, without going into conspiracy, but the fact that I usually speak most about it, and I think it's so ridiculous that people bought it, is that the fuel of the plane managed to burn, to melt the steel bars that are in case of this specific building. They were not on the outside, but on the inside. So it managed to burn everything down, but the passport of one of the pilots, the terrorist pilots, was found without a scorch, a block away on the top of a building. And people bought it, and I find that so strange. How is it possible? What's this? This is really interesting in terms of psychological masses, because it is like a global hypnotism. How people believe stuff just because they have an amount of information behind it that their brain just stops working. I find it fascinating.
It's funny when I looked at images of all these different countries in the Middle East getting bombed now, you see the buildings explode. But unlike in New York, the buildings around it, they don't fall to the ground, you know, like controlled demolition. They get their windows blown out or something, but they keep standing. And they're much worse constructed than the skyscrapers in New York. So that building 7, who just fell down, also looks a bit dumb, you know, I think.
Yeah, it's dumb until you see that one of the major intelligence agencies had rent one of the floors. I think it was the top floor, but I'm not sure. And there they storage all the documents that they wanted to see gone. And then you hear the very owner of the Building 7 on the news being interviewed, his first interview where it's the only one where he said it, that he was the one to order the demolition of the building because he thought that the building was no longer in condition to be used. So he ordered the demolition of the building. And it was done so quickly, you see. You managed to contract people to go and put bombs in a building next to two buildings that just crashed because of the crash of the plane, a time when the country was stopped in horror. And he managed to do all those things in hours, which is amazing. And people bought it. Well, in the second interview, he retracted what he said because he was warned just not to say that he was the one that ordered the building down. But there are so many inconsistencies, in that process that is, well, how people still believe it, I don't know.
Yeah, it's funny. And like just recently, this thing where Syria, where I'm amazed how, because I usually don't get my news from mainstream sources because there's no point, but I always check the mainstream because I just want to know how they spin it. And I thought it was so funny that they like were talking about these rebels providing freedom to this country, and I'm like, hello, isn't that Al-Qaeda? What are you talking about? So suddenly they like became these freedom fighters and like good people, but these are the same people that you were complaining about for years and years with this war on terror, and it's like Al-Qaeda, but now they're good people. And it seems like either most people are, they have amnesia, they don't remember, or they don't really look past headlines.
Yeah, but people forget their own history, because I give you an example. Lots of people, although most think it's a terrible, terrible movie, and probably is, lots of people saw Rambo 3. But the important thing about Rambo 3 is that it clearly shows that who trained the Taliban were the Americans to fight against the Russians that were trying to invade Afghanistan.
They're gaslighting about it also. They say things now that didn't happen, like they pretend that like at one point they said something that the vaccine would protect you from spreading it, and then they said it didn't protect from spreading it, but now they're saying they've never said it protected from spreading. Like they gaslight, they like change the narrative, and it seems like most people don't remember, but I remember. Like I remember very clearly. And it's funny also because one problem living in a bubble, because all my friends and people I communicate with have a similar sort of outlook on life, so I don't really interact too much with the normal people of society, like the big mass. But I do sometimes with my day job, I have to do that, and I forget how far away they are from me. So I remember I was recently talking to this woman, and we were talking about when it came to the Ukraine war, how one-sided the journalism is, like the journalists are only speaking from one perspective and not from the other perspective, so it's very one-sided, and she agreed with that. And then I said, yeah, another example of that was COVID, and I noticed her, she hadn't even realized there was another side. She only thought there was one side. So I was kind of shocked because I forgot that, yeah, most people, they don't even know there was another perspective on that. They just think it was the narrative, you know?
Yeah. Let me tell you something about that. I shared several times on X an academic paper showing blood sample analysis from vaccinated people from all the vaccine manufacturers. The result was always the same. People who had their blood filled with, for lack of a better word, for some kind of fibers flowing in the blood. Now, this was online for almost 2 years. And I shared it several times, and I recorded it in my computer several times. I even used to have it in my telephone. And now I ask you, how is it possible that now the same link goes to a different paper, that the files that I had in my computer and in my phone are gone? I can't find them, not even with programs that go for deleted stuff. I cannot find them, those files. And on the other side is the fact that everything that people were telling as an advice against the vaccines is coming true. Even Elon Musk is doing several posts. I'm not sure if he's relating it to COVID, but he's doing several posts. I think he's relating it to immigration, but doing several posts that global population is declining because people are becoming sterile, which was one of the things that people that researched the vaccines knew it would happen. For instance, in Portugal, we have a massive increase on immigration from Bangladesh, from India, from countries that we didn't have represented here. And they are having children, sorry for the expression, like rabbits. And Portuguese people that were vaccinated to the staggering 96% of the population, including the young, now are finding very hard to have children. They are seeing people dying weekly from situations that people just say, oh, it's just something that it has. But they don't realize it's all caused by this massive eugenic movement. And I'm sorry if I'm ruining your show, but...
No. I think it's... I mean, I never really thought about vaccines that much before. I knew there was skepticism and I didn't discredit it, but I wasn't really even interested in it. I thought, oh, I'm sure it's fine. And I have had some of the vaccines, like... that you do get when you're a child. But when you start to look, because of COVID, you know, you go like, okay, wait a minute, let me look at the other stuff. And then you realize also that the vaccines that I got as a child, because I have children now, so they want to give the same vaccines as I got to my kids. But the problem is it's not the same vaccine. It's like 50 more ingredients, same. You know, like it's not really the same thing, you know.
Look, my two twins are not vaccinated. Apart from what they took in the hospital that was out of my control when they were born, they are not vaccinated. And I see, for instance, my sister children that are more or less always sick with something, and then she gives them antihistamines and stuff like that that doesn't help at all, although it masks the symptoms. And my daughters, I never, ever, since birth, had to go one time to the hospital with the situation. Not one. And they are not vaccinated. I had the social services after me, because I even in school I refused for them to, because they said they are not vaccinated, they cannot attend the school. And I created a massive dossier with arguments against the vaccines. This is way before COVID.
Well, is it mandatory where you are?
They are not mandatory, but they try to ruin your life. They even tried to make me considered me as mad. I even had to go to a psychologist to get an assertion that I was a completely sane person, because they tried to take the children away because of that. Because I didn't even allow, for instance, the Fluor take. That it's so crazy. They give a cup, those small cups of coffee, three times a year, full of Fluor to the children in the basic grade. So children that is between 5 and 9, a cup of that. It's absolutely ridiculous. It's like killing the brain. And I also refuse to do that. And the funny thing is, when the lady said, "Oh, but your children will be mixed with others that are vaccinated, so there is a risk they contagious the other children with the disease that they are not protected for." And I said, there's something wrong with your discourse there. If you believe in vaccines, if you believe that the other children are protected, so I'm the one at risk here, not you. And you see, my children are healthy because they already had three years of school when this happened. So that was the argument that I saw the eyes becoming frozen and the soul disappeared. And from that point on, although the meeting lasted for more than an hour after that, she was not even listening to a word that I was saying. So,
but what, another thing is, like, it was very common for me, my generation and the generations before, that when you're a child, you get chicken pox, you know, the dots all over your body and it itches. And the way it was usually done was that if the parents find out somebody in the class has chicken pox, they make the child go play with that child so they also get chicken pox, because you want them to get chicken pox, and then it's annoying for a week, and then you never have chicken pox again in your whole life. And the problem I have now is no children have chicken pox, so I can't give, my kids have still not got chicken pox, and I'm trying to find a child that has chicken pox because they've vaccinated them all for chicken pox. It's so stupid. So now they can't, I mean, it's much better to get chicken pox because then you never get it again. But if you vaccinate against chicken pox, it's, you know, like, it's much weaker protection. So it's very annoying now. They might not get chicken pox. And it is more dangerous to get chicken pox when you're older. Yeah, so, which puts me in dilemma. Okay, do I have to now vaccinate against chicken pox because they'll never get chicken pox? I mean, it's so annoying.
Well, if you are allowed to read the actual ingredients of the vaccine, and if you go and research for the ingredients of the original vaccine against chickenpox, it was completely efficient, and it is similar or just the same, I would say that you take that vaccine. But I doubt it that you find that the vaccine is just that, because they are mixing so much stuff into it that it's just crazy. It's just crazy.
Mm. Yeah, it's funny that they are so obsessed with mis and disinformation when they do so much themselves. It's pretty ironic.
Yeah, but you touched on free speech, and that's something I would like to say something more. Free speech, it's not offending, never was. Free speech is just the expression of an opinion. And sometimes that opinion is even criticized when it's given by comedians, which I find completely ridiculous. A comedian should be able to speak about everything: disabled people, people with deficiency, fat people, white people, Asian people, black people, whatever he wants to discuss, because it's a comedian. It doesn't offend anyone. You might find it funny and you listen to it, or you don't and you don't listen to it. So there used to be an American comedian that I can't remember the name right now, but he was magnificent with words. And he used to say that if you don't like what you're listening in the radio, change the station. That's what the knob is for. So instead of being offended, if you don't like it, don't listen to it, but don't criticize it. Because you're not in a position to criticize anything, because you have your own opinions. Who is to say that your opinions are better or more real than the other ones? So whatever you believe, express yourself, but don't be upset if other people don't agree with you, and don't criticize those that don't.
Yeah, and it's also funny with the Barbara Streisand effect, where I had a recent, because I haven't really been that interested in it anyway, but I mean, like, I've never ever, like, had any thoughts about denying the Holocaust or that the Holocaust didn't happen. I haven't really even thought about it. It's not an interest of mine. But this year, my country made it illegal to deny the Holocaust. And the same day I read the news that it was illegal to deny the Holocaust, I started denying the Holocaust. I was like, what, you know, if you're making it legal to deny the Holocaust, guess what? Now I'm denying it. You see that woman, she's against abortion in England, and she was standing outside an abortion clinic demonstrating, you know, she's against it. So she got arrested. But then she started standing outside the abortion clinic without a sign. She didn't say anything. She was just standing there praying to the victims of abortion in her mind. And there's a video of this. The police comes and they arrest her. So she got arrested for thinking. I thought that was pretty, like, both sad and funny. Like, they really gone that far. Like, I mean, how could he arrest somebody for thinking? Like, that's which with instantly gives me support to, like, maybe abortion is wrong. I mean, like, that's how I work. Like, if something is so dangerous, then I'm starting to think about it. Or at least support, even if I don't agree with her, I would still support her thinking whatever she's thinking, you know, like, how can you ban a thought?
But it's a small process that I see going on. For instance, this is a small aspect of it, but it's one that touches something that I really like. I really like to drive. I like to think myself as a very good driver, and even in terms of professionally. And I see these cars coming out without shape or form, electric, when electric is far from being the best choice, either ecologically or in terms of transportation, especially until we have the solid state batteries that they have for 5 or 4 years now and still didn't put it in the cars. But I see that this is moving to another massive loss of freedom, that we'll be forced, and people are applauding this, we'll be forced to enter our car to make sure the car knows who we are. Then we have to input our destination and take the chance that the car turns back to us and say, I'm sorry, but your social credits does not allow you to go that far. Or you only have the 15 minutes city range to maneuver. Or this is a period where the government doesn't accept transportation from one area to another. So people are applauding something that will convert, for sure, into something that will remove their freedom. For instance, one person now that has bought an electric car, he might think he can go from in my case, from Lisbon to Porto, that is 300 kilometers or 188 miles. But it can't. Because he only can do it if it goes at 70 kilometers an hour. If it goes at normal speeds, you never reach it. It just doesn't have the autonomy. You put a car like that on Nürburgring that is supposed to do 300 miles of range, and you do 4 laps, and that doesn't reach 100 miles. So it's just a slow stepping into a world where we are gaining gadgets and losing freedom constantly, gradually, without even seeing. It's like a frog being boiled in cold water. Sorry for the rant again, but I think this should be relevant, because this affects many other areas of society where the same is happening. We are losing our freedoms daily, slowly, without noticing it.
I don't know if I mentioned it to you before, but I have an idea to start an NGO, like a charity NGO, to promote free speech only. And I was thinking of having it, the name of this NGO be "Fuck You." that's the name of
Let's start there. Let's start there.
That's the NGO's name. Like, even the name is offensive.
Well, if you're looking for some kind of credibility, I would change the name, although I think it's very appropriate, but perhaps it will close you some doors. But I think it's a great idea. But you will have to succeed where others failed. Even the guy that most people know only as Mr. Bean, he has tried to do what you're saying for free speech, and he was even allowed to go in television because he is who he is, but still with no effect. It lasted for 2 days and was buried completely.
Yeah, I have a good example of why free speech, how it works. I don't know if you know who Nick Fuentes is.
I heard the name, but I don't know who it is.
Well, Nick Fuentes is a very right-wing, conservative, pro-white, pro-Christian influencer. Has a Rumble channel and everything, and he was banned. He calls himself one of the most banned people in America because his bank is banned. He's banned in everywhere. But when Elon Musk bought Twitter, they allowed him back on. So it became like a big thing, like, oh, how can he allow this, you know, and Elon Musk went, well, free speech will take care of it, you know, like that. So when he was allowed back on, I started to follow him because he was banned so much, I became interested. So I started watching his videos, and he is very funny. Like the way he talks is very funny. I don't agree really with what he's saying, but he is funny, and he's also, you know, like he has some sort of charisma that I enjoyed. So I kept watching his videos, and he was talking about politics, and that was interesting from his perspective. And eventually, when I watched enough videos, I went, well, now I've heard too much that I don't agree with. So now I'm not interested in him anymore. So, and I'm not going to agree with him. So
it's not funny enough.
Yeah. Yeah. Goodbye. You know, but I mean, like, so allowing him to have his free speech didn't make me become a pro-white conservative Christian. It just made me like understand his perspective more, and I did see some good things, but in the end I rejected it anyway, you know, like it doesn't. But when he was banned, you know, like it just makes, that's the only reason I started following him. So if he'd never been banned, I would never have been so if you don't want me to be exposed to something, don't ban it,
you know, like, absolutely. But look, you I'm sure that that like me, you have opinions and points of view, but you are not tied up to them. Because as soon as things change and you get new information that is verifiable and accountable, and that you see that changes the narrative that you were following, you are ready to change your narrative because of that. The problem is most, as you did with that fellow, you find it funny, you agreed with something, but then you start seeing that, well, it's not funny enough for me to listen what I don't agree with. But most people don't do that. Most people had to take a position and stand by that position to the end of their lives, independently of what comes after. And I find that really, really strange. For instance, that's one of the things that I have more fights with, fights in the good sense, with my father, because my father took a position when he was, I don't know, 20 years old, and he stands by the same position today, regardless of how many defects that can have. And I found that a very curious process that I find in most people really. They just follow a narrative, and they don't care of what comes next that can add or take from that narrative.
Yeah. Yeah, I only follow principle. Like I'm against, you know, like I'm against killing children, for instance. Like it's like a principle. But if I hear different facts about 9/11 and I find out that, in fact, that the official narrative is true, like I find evidence that it is, then I will change my mind on that, because it's not really, doesn't affect my principles in a sense.
Exactly. Yeah, I agree with you. That's exactly how my perspective. And it's as I was saying before, it's like this classic case of people thinking they know what's good and wrong, or right and wrong. They don't. Their basic assumptions about good and evil, sorry, that's what I meant, good and evil, are based on their culture, on the things that they were taught. because it as soon as that country enters in a war with another country, the other country will be the enemies, the demons, terrible people. They should be killed, and you go to battle and you kill them. But on the other country, the opinion will be exactly the opposite. So how can there be two things opposite that are both true? They just can't. So this shows to me that people just don't think about things. There's that classic case of the second of the First World War, when in Christmas Eve they decided to do a truce, and some people of the trenches on the Allied side got up the trenches and went to play football with the German side. And what happened is they played football, they had supper together, and on the next day they refused to fight. Because they knew the faces, the characters, the people they were trying to kill the day before. And now they didn't want to kill them anymore. So this is historical. They had to be sent home because they refused to fight anymore. They had to send new people that didn't know each other for them to continue to kill each other. So this is a classical case of the notion that we have about what is good and evil is completely rubbish. What we should have is what we are saying. We should have principles, moralities. And the basic answer, the essence of it for me is empathy. Is you should not do to others what you wouldn't like done to you or yours. So under that principle, I think we shouldn't need police, governments, or any of the sort to control us, as long as we live by these kind of rules instead of by notions of good and evil.
I don't know if maybe I have been somebody, my mom or somebody taught me that, those principles. I have no idea where they come from. I've always had them, like, so maybe we're born with them, unless you're a psychopath, but in general maybe we're born with them, or your parents instill them. I don't know if but considering so many lack principles, maybe it's not the parents. I don't know, maybe it's something you're born with.
Yeah, I think in that regard you were lucky enough to be what I think I'm making the right conclusion here. You're a person that has no, although we might have some sort of trauma that we all have, although you have some sort of insecurities or complexes, you don't allow them to rule your life. You don't immediately think that people are messing with you or making you feel inferior, because that's impossible by speech. Absolutely impossible. So you can be bullied by a big guy that punches you in the face, but you cannot be bullied by a big guy just calling you names. It just doesn't happen. It's just his opinion. And as long as you don't have these kinds of feelings of inferiority that I believe most people grow up with, and they just can't rid of them, these insecurities are used against them. And it turns out that what some of us can take as just another people's opinion, and that's fine. Others take really serious as the something that diminishes them as a person, as an individual, as a human being. And it is not so.
Please remind again about the magazine and other things, where they can get it, and any other things you want to promote.
Sure. So you can get, I would advise to go to the institutefornaturalphilosophy.org, where you can find already a repository of my personal archive that is already online, especially about archaeacoustics. You'll find the magazine, the new magazine from the Institute called Pharos. It's still there for download freely. And you can also see it on the website itself in full screen. In terms of myself, I would promote my Substract. There is also Ricardo Calvário. I would promote my X account. That is at what it is, Ricardo Calvário 1, exactly. I would put my YouTube channel, that is History, Myths and Legends, and also the YouTube channel for the Institute for Natural Philosophy, where I do interviews and other types of videos that I don't do on my channel. And thank you for the opportunity and for inviting me to be here. It's always good to speak with you. It was very pleasant. Thank you.
In a world veiled in mystery and driven by the quest for the impossible, join Alex on a transformative journey through the arcane art of transmutation. From ancient practices to the birth of modern science, we will uncover the secrets and stories of history's most enigmatic philosophers. The Natural Born Alchemist podcast presents a series that explores the trials, triumphs, and mystical pursuits of alchemy, the original quest for wisdom and power. Be sure to subscribe and unlock the vault of forgotten knowledge. Don't miss a single episode of this detailed telling of the history of alchemy, where we turn the leaden pages of history into podcast gold.
So please go to instituteformaturalphilosophy.org/magazine, and I highly recommend you check it out. You can also follow Ricardo on X at Ricardo CALVRIO and then the number 1. I'll leave all these links in the program notes so you can easily click on it. Considering we talked a bit in this episode about the Library of Alexandria, I'm going to do a rerun of a song I've played in the past by the Galactic Federation of Love called Library of Alexandria, but this time I go with the live version. Enjoy and see you all in the next one. Freedom is in the mind.
You gave me a book. I took a look. Some pages were missing. And so we started kissing. Alexandria, your catalog number, you never gave me a call. But now it's burning down to the ground. Woo! You took it to the prince, the keeper in the moon, buried way underground, living in a little town. At the library of Alexandria, maybe your catalog number, you never gave me a call. But now it's burning to the ground. You put your number on the bathroom wall. When you gonna give me that call? You left the Bible on the bathroom sink. But when you gonna give it a drink? 2, 3, 4. It's burning.
burning down to the ground.
Yes, that was the one. That was the one.